As you may have just heard, there's an excessive amount of noise in the background right now because I'm actually doing this webinar from the airport just before I am boarding a flight. So it turned out that yesterday, when we usually have the webinar, I had postponed it because I had a flight that day and got canceled. And so now this was the only flight that I can get out. And so now we're going to talk from the airport. So if you have any trouble hearing me over the sound of the airport at any point, let me know. And we will just roll with it. And hopefully my mic is good enough that you're mostly just hearing me. So what we're talking about today, similarly to last week when we talked about narrative, thanks Alicia for putting your name in there. Similarly to last week when we talked about narrative forms and story structure, it's something very near and dear to my heart that I spend a lot of time studying these days. And that is the art of the essay. And for those of you that read either the newsletter or the blog post preceding this call, you probably heard or saw me mention that you're likely already writing essays without realizing it on your own blogs if you do, in fact, have a blog. And you may even be writing essays for clients, especially those of you that do ghost blogging or other forms of writing for other business owners. You might be writing essays in their newsletters. Newsletters are a really common place to find essays as well. And a dear friend of mine who now is a multiple New York Times bestselling author, when he first started, he was like, I want to be a writer and I want to be an essayist. And he did that by starting a blog, and he would say, I publish essays 2 days a week or 3 days a week. And he always very clearly classified his blog posts as essays. So one of the things we're going to talk about today is, what exactly does that mean? If you're calling something that you're writing an essay, what does that mean? What does that look like? How is that different from other types of writing? So first we're going to talk about what that distinction is, and then we're going to talk about a couple different approaches to the process of writing essays. And what I mean by that in terms of approaches is actually the sort of structural elements, as well as things like different topics that you can take that are unique to the essay market. So yeah, so it's interesting. I see there's about, it seems like maybe two-thirds of those of you on the call, your names aren't showing up. So if you want to just drop in the chat box, like I said, like Alicia did right here, if your name isn't showing up when you ask a question, just drop your name in, because that'll help me with context, as I do know many of you. So at the end, we're going to talk a little bit about the different markets for personal essays in terms of where you can sell them, but we're also going to talk about how they fit into the greater marketplace. And it might be unsurprising to those of you who follow this particular outlet, but one of the touchstones that I'm going to talk about several points during this call, both in terms of learning the essay style and structure, as well as publication, is the New York Times, because they also secretly have some things to help you write essays besides just get them published. So one of the things that I've noticed on here, of course, we say the Travel Magazine database, which is a big cornerstone of what Dream of Travel Writing does. And something that I've noticed in putting together the Travel Magazine database is that a lot of this type of thing, such as essays or what we talked about last week, narrative features, these are things that a lot of you come and tell me, I really want to write things like this, but I just don't know where to publish them. And I've really been shocked, to be honest, about how many markets are out there for this type of thing. And in fact, one of the reasons in the Travel Magazine database that we have so many magazines is that a lot of these stories that you would write that are travel-oriented stories, whether features or essays, actually appear in magazines that aren't strictly about travel. So we'll talk, of course, like I said, later in the call about markets, but one of the best places to place your first person essays about travel is actually in women's magazines, which pay very, very, very well. They pay, you know, $2 a word, if not $1 word, but you can definitely get $2 word rates even as a first-time writer for those outlets. And those are magazines like Red in the UK is a great one. Town and Country in America publishes quite a bit of travel as well. So we'll talk more about that. And in terms of my background for what we're talking about today, those of you that were here at the top of the call, I said that this is something that's near and dear to my heart, but I really go out of my way because I have noticed that it's something that a lot of you are interested in. I'm not so much of an essayist myself, but because it's something that you guys are really interested in, whenever I go to the big writing conferences that are for I don't want to say writers, like we're all not writers, but that are for these more, you know, foo-foo-y writers, like novelists and fiction and people who want to be starving artists just to create really artsy writing. I go to a lot of these workshops on essays because it's really very eye-opening how this type of form, as in, you know, an essay versus a narrative feature versus a poem versus a piece of journalism, how this type of form seems quite esoteric or hard to pinpoint how to do it, but it's actually one of the easier ones. And so I'm going to share with you a lot of tips and tricks that I've picked up over the past couple of years of checking out those resources. And also I'm going to share with you some names and some specific places for you to check out if essay is a type of writing that really appeals to you. So before we dive into that, before we dive into how to do it, where to do it, let's really zero in on what is an essay, and particularly personal essays are what we're going to talk about today. So it's very easy, especially if you look in, you know, say a newspaper, or a really good example also is something that's less read now, but it's the Saturday Evening Post or something like that. But there's these magazines that I see less now that the People Weeklies of the world have taken over. But about, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when you were in line at the grocery store, the magazines that you would see on the stand right at the checkout were more of these ones that are small, they're book size, they're quite thick, and they're weekly. And they would include a mix of fiction and nonfiction and writing on all sorts of different topics. And if you look at something like that or something like a newspaper, you're going to see a mix of all of these different pieces that are inherently nonfiction and inherently first person that could be thought of or referred to by some people perhaps as essays, but they aren't all essays. So I want to really zero in on some things that aren't essays because that can help you understand what an essay is, because like I said, it is a bit amorphous and diffuse, that definition. So somebody, I think it was Carol, I'm trying to match, if you don't write your name in the same question, then I'm not always sure if that was you. So somebody had asked, how long is an essay? And that's a great question because it really doesn't matter. There's not a sort of fixed length. Like I would say that a feature, like a narrative feature, wouldn't usually take place below 700 words, but I wouldn't say the same thing about an essay. An essay can be 10,000 words, and you can probably even do it in 250 words. So it's less about the length at hand. So let's look at another thing here, an op-ed. So this, you know, comes more than anything from newspapers, but this concept of an op-ed is something that I see a lot of people confusing for an essay. And this is really important to note because an essay should not be something in which you are opining, in which you are very vehemently and aggressively stating your opinion. That is an opinion piece that is not an essay. And this is really important because as I was doing some, you know, refreshing background for today's call, one of the things that I was reading quite a bit about that they talk about in several different articles in the New York Times, in fact, is the death of the modern essay. There was something of a renaissance of the modern essay when writing online came about, and the New York Times, as they love to do, has proclaimed the death of it. And I'm going to get a little bit more into that trajectory in a bit, but one of the reasons is because of this opining, because of this opinion expressing and vehemence in essays. And that's the thing, is that they aren't. And so we can look at what New York Times has called the death of the essay as the loss of the craft of the essay, which we're going to talk about, and the divergence into things that are more opinion spouting than original essays. So are all first-person thought pieces essays? Not necessarily. And we're going to look specifically on the next slide about the difference between journalism and narrative first-person pieces in this vein. But one of the things I want to look at here is this concept of the nonfiction short story, because you might be led astray if you go out on your own to do some research and say, hey, I want to start writing these essays. Let me read some. Let me see what other people are writing. You might be led astray by book-length works or works published as books as a collection of essays that end up being more nonfiction short stories. So this is because the short story as a name, as a term, has been rather appropriated by fiction writers as something that they do that we nonfiction writers do not. So occasionally you'll see things that are called a book of essays, but they're actually a book of short stories, but they're short stories that are all true. So another question that we had, are essays good for newspapers? I would say that newspapers are one of the places that you'll commonly see essays, but it's not necessarily the only thing that you should be pitching to a newspaper. And we're going to talk a little bit, like I said, at the end about markets. But one of the things that I just want to add on that note, and thanks for this question, Carrie, is that a lot of places for you guys to write essays, especially to get your first few essays out there, are going to be your local, not necessarily papers. So not necessarily like the Chicago Tribune affiliate or the Sun affiliate or the Times affiliate that's the main newspaper in your market, but the alternative weeklies that are printed on newsprint that are available for free in your city. That's going to be a really great source of opportunities for essays. And likewise, I actually just serendipitously had a coaching call with somebody yesterday or the day before who has a very cushy gig of writing essays every issue just about, you know, what's on her mind or the change of the seasons for a regional magazine. So regional magazines, special interest magazines, even trade magazines also can be a good place for that. So somebody has asked, and I'll mention this because it goes back to the last slide. So creative nonfiction, is that an essay form? So creative nonfiction is sort of similar to narrative nonfiction, and creative nonfiction can, I would say it can be an essay, but it's typically not. Creative nonfiction is usually a term that's used more for those things that are, like I was saying, short stories that happen to be true. So they're more for narrative short stories is what the realm of creative nonfiction encases, let's just say. So I pulled this quote out, and this comes from a New York Times piece, which is actually reviewing a book by one of the really major essayists of our time. And I love this quote because it just in that first sentence of this New York Times piece, they really encapsulate a lot of the issue with essays. And for those of you who are working on improving your writing, and especially working on improving your pitching and getting your point across quickly, this is also really important. This sentence, like I said, began this New York Times article, but it is inherently very factual, very foundation setting. It's not flowery, okay? And this is the way, not just that a lot of writing is going, but especially in essays. Essays are not meant to be places for you to take descriptive diatribes where you talk about what exists in a place through a lens of the senses. It's more meant to be through the mind. And I'll show this on another slide, but very poignantly, one of the main works today on essays and on essay writing and how to physically do it is called To Show and To Tell, as opposed to Show, Don't Tell, which is something you hear me mention a lot. Even though it's quite a trite phrase, it is still true and very useful. So here in this, in the beginning of the New York Times piece that I mentioned, they say the personal essay has always been a stepchild of serious literature, seemingly formless, hard to classify, lacking the tight construction of a short story or the narrative arc of a novel or memoir. Important, memoir here they're using as a stand-in for something that is not a novel, but is a first-person narrative, which happens to be true. Okay, so this is narrative nonfiction that they're talking about here. So lacking the tight construction of a short story or the narrative arc of a novel or memoir, such essays have given readers pleasure without winning cultural respect. So this, like I said, I love this because it encapsulates really what we need to know about essays. They have been around for a long time. They are a very legitimate and institutionalized way of writing. However, they aren't given as much play, so to say, even though people really like them. And this, in part, is why blogging has so much to do with essays, and why, if you have had a really good run with your blog and people really like it, that you are well positioned to move into the world of essays, okay? Because an essay on your blog, or rather a blog post, does satisfy many of these things that we're talking about, right? It's like the stepchild of serious writing. It can seem formless and hard to classify, right? We just call it a blog post. We don't call it, sometimes we call it a roundup, but otherwise, what is it if it's not a roundup or a narrative and it's on your blog, right? and it lacks this tight construction in terms of how a short story or a longer piece of the narrative arc would follow those tropes, those pathways that we talked about last week, like that 17-step incredibly detailed hero's journey. But readers really like them without the greater sort of editorial, you know, ivory tower understanding why or really giving them credit for that. So somebody has a question on the side about explaining what third person and first person is. And if that's something you're not clear on, I really recommend reading about it more in depth. But just a short answer is first person is when you're writing as I, and third person is when you're writing as omniscient, or as, you know, everybody has a name and there's no I character. Second person is when you're writing with the dominant person as you. But I really recommend reading more about that, because that's kind of outside of the scope of what we're talking about now. So let's look at a couple different ways that essays are not certain things, because I know this is something, as several of you have put in your questions, that it's a little hard to grasp onto. So an essay, as opposed to what I'm always telling you about your other writing, that you need to make sure, for instance, that when you are putting together a pitch, when you're working on a piece, that there is a point, that there's something that you are convincing your reader of, and that every single detail in your pitch and your eventual piece is in service of convincing the reader of that thing. Essays are quite the opposite, really. So essays are not only the lack of a point that you're trying to convince people of and an assemblage of unrelated things, but they go even further, and we're going to talk about this more in a second. They go even further in that they shouldn't have a point. It's not even that they don't have one, it's that they shouldn't. It's that you should not lead the reader to a specific conclusion, but rather present information to them that offers them the opportunity to themselves think in the same way that you have been thinking on the page and come to their own personal conclusion, not one that you've led them to by offering examples, but their own personal opinion on the situation. So this is why it's really important, like I was talking about, that your opinion is not prevalent, aggressive, dominating, and dictating the flow of your essay, because the point of the essay is for the reader to come to their own. So we've talked about how it's different than opinion pieces, but let's talk about how it's different than narrative. So narrative, as we looked at last week, and that was why I looked at the narrative last week before we talked about this essay market this week, even though you might think of the feature as a sort of higher on the rung of articles, is that you need to understand the idea, the tenets of narrative, how narratives work, why they work, before you break that, right? It's like learning the rules of cooking or construction. My friends like to say that they have no idea why I'm constructing the things the way that I do, but they work, before you break them. So the whole idea of writing an essay that isn't driven by narrative means that you need to keep the reader interested throughout with each of the things that you are saying, but that you aren't following that strict narrative path that we looked at last week, where you set the scene, you present an obstacle, you try to overcome that obstacle, you encounter another obstacle and another obstacle, and then things get really terrible, and then there's a triumphant success, and then the story resolves, and the hero or the protagonist or the main subject of the piece is in a different, better place at the end than they were at the beginning, right? That's the very short form, for those of you who weren't with us last week, of what a narrative arc entails. So in that, like an opinion piece, where by the end I want you to also believe something that I have set out to prove to you, a narrative arc sets out that the conditions at the beginning of the piece by the end have changed in a positive way, most likely, but there has been some transformation. However, in an essay, you might be presenting scenes or anecdotes. You might only be presenting your thoughts. You might only be presenting statistics or other types of analytical evidence. We'll get to that in a little bit. But the idea, like I said, is that you do not arrive somewhere. So it's as if you are taking the reader on the journey with you, but then you stop before you get to the end. That's kind of one way of thinking about it. Okay, so let's look at journalism. So how is an essay different than journalism? I had on a coaching call this week somebody tell me that, not that it stresses her out per se, but she just doesn't love when she's writing pieces that are about other people or telling other people's stories. And she has to make sure that she has completely fact-checked everything, that she's got all these details, that they're absolutely right, and that she is faithfully representing the people that she's discussed. In essays, you don't have to worry about that faithful representation. Now, I'm not telling you, again, that this is a place to be aggressive about your opinions and so on, but that this is a place where the important thing is what you think. The important thing is your observations or your take on this topic. And that is actually kind of the key to unlocking how you can write an essay about anything, because you have your own personal opinion on everything, single thing that you come across, you know, in the world. Like, for instance, right now I'm in the San Francisco airport, so in California, where they're eco-conscious. And here we have not just a trash and a recycling, but they also have a compost here in the airport. And I just got into a very unusual spat with my typically very tranquil best friend over throwing something in her trash can that she said should be recycling. And it was a type of plastic that we can't even recycle in my building in New York. And the point of me sort of threading together all of these disparate things, right? I'm in San Francisco, then I'm in Boston with my friend last week, then I'm thinking back to my building in New York, is that this is how essays work. They take these disparate moments that are around a theme, and they are viewed through the lens of your experience with them. And this is why, like I was saying, essays can be hard to really put your finger on, because they are all about your opinion and your experience. They are inherently different to every writer. The essays that come from every writer are different in how they come out, because different writers remember things differently, or their memories, not just that they remember an experience differently, but the way that they jump from one memory to another, the way that they make associations are inherently different. And that's why essays are such a personal form of writing. So unlike journalism, where your job is to faithfully represent the facts, the quote-unquote objective reality of the world, in an essay, you are endeavoring to present your personal take on things. So then how is that different than a diary, right? Somebody who is or was predominantly a fiction writer and has now moved into, let's call it, the creative nonfiction memoir, narrative nonfiction world, her first book of that take was called A Diary. And she was talking at a conference about how she came up with that title. And it was in part because in a book length form, narrative nonfiction is somewhat new, but also because it was essentially one long essay that she was writing. And she didn't really know what the name for book length essay was. But here's the thing, is that a diary inherently has, yes, your take on different things, your thoughts. But what diaries also have, much more than essays, and even much more than this person's book who I just referred to, is a play-by-play of what happened. So I have a good friend who, when we lived in Italy, would journal every night, and then she would read her book for a while. And so I knew that if we were sharing a room together somewhere, you know, going to bed meant about 45 minutes from when she was actually going to be able to turn the light out. And that's because she would sit there and write down in her diary what had happened that day. And then I noticed when we weren't living in Italy anymore, and I was staying with her one time, that she didn't journal. And I asked her, I said, why aren't you writing in your journal or your diary? And she said, because interesting things aren't happening now. So this is what I mean by a diary, much more than an essay, is about the play-by-play. It's about the recording of events that have taken place. But that's not something that we're looking to do in an essay. Can you just hold on one moment, guys? Okay, great. Got it. Okay. So what you're doing in a diary is much more about recording the facts as they have happened than sharing your opinions. Sharing your opinions is something that happens in your diary, but it's not the gist of it. Whereas what the essay should be, as opposed to a diary, is it should be all the opinions and observations, and just that modicum, just the tiniest bit of you could call it narration, but I just like to think of it as events, of relaying of events, the smallest bit of relaying of events possible, and the most of your observation and your connections. So as we've talked about what essays aren't, what this is really boiling down to is that the essay is about your observations and the connections that you draw between those things and things that have happened in the past or other things that you know about. So I took a workshop on the personal essay with this lovely, lovely gentleman who is the editor of the Traveler's Tales books, which put out a book of, you know, nonfiction short stories, let's call it, having to do with travel. Every year they do the best women's travel writing and some other collections. He also publishes book-length works. And he has been a newspaper writer for a long time. He's written features. He's done lots and lots of different writing. But now he specifically teaches personal essays. And I remember the first day in his workshop, I was just flabbergasted because he basically got up there and wrote out loud for us a personal essay that came from him sitting on the highway on the way to the workshop venue that morning. And he talked about how he was there and this reminded him of this other thing. And then he jumped back in time to this thing that happened with his son. And that reminded him of this other thing that happened with his son and so on and so forth until he came back at the end to that initial moment of sitting in the car after this journey. But the journey didn't necessarily go somewhere, right? He came back to him sitting in the car, and it wasn't that he was a different person. And we're going to get into now, we're going to start talking about ways of constructing essays. But I just wanted to share that as we're talking about what essays aren't. Because like I said, essays are going to be slightly different for each of you, but what that means is that part of them is the freedom. So narrative has arcs. Journalism has rules. Diaries are also free, but that also means that they're free from the need to keep readers interested, which is not the case when you are writing essays for the greater market. So I mentioned these names before, but I just want to give these to you so that you have them to look up later. And I'm going to drop here in the chat box. This is the actual link to that New York Times page that I was talking about, which is the New York Times page where they really give you a lot of tools and they give you particular essays to look at. And this page from the New York Times was put together in response to essays that are pitched to the New York Times. So this is really great because it's from editors who know why they reject things and have put together a list of tips to help you to not get rejected in the same way. These two at the top, The Art of the Personal Essay and To Show and To Tell, these books are by that gentleman that I mentioned who's really kind of the one of the leading figures of personal essays today. And To Show and To Tell, even though the Art of the Personal Essay sounds like it should be the title, which is telling you how to do it, To Show and To Tell is much more of that how-to manual about how to go about doing it. And this gentleman, I've seen him speak, he's really lovely, but quite academic. So if academic style of information dispensation is your style, check out These Items by Philip. If you like something that's a little more web-based and quick, check out the New York Times. They've got a very roundup style list of their favorite tips on writing essays and a lot of links for you to read as well. Both of Philip's books also have many essay examples for you to look at as well. And another great resource is the Salon.com essay section. And I've seen the woman who used to be the essay editor at Salon speak several times, and she's just lovely. And a really great, her name is Kim, and a really great essay of hers to look up to see what essays are like today, even though it's not within the realm of travel, is her essay on when she left her child in her car. And I mentioned this, and there's another place that I'm going to type here in the chat box called Granta. Granta is a literary magazine, but they have many articles available online. But it's nonfiction, and it has a lot of these essays similar to the one of Kim's on Salon that I had mentioned. So let's get into actual ways to put these quote-unquote formless essays together. All right, I've got five for you that I want to look at in particular. And like I mentioned, don't forget that the New York Times also offers a lot of exercises and starting points for writing essays as well. So that link that I put there in the chat box is definitely worth checking out. So here are five approaches. The first one, I've already mentioned to you, this time dilation to give weight to the present. This is what Larry did in his car on the highway that day before he presented the verbal version of his essay to us. So I remember after leaving his workshop that I was home in New York and I was crossing the street between about the Guggenheim and Central Park, which is across the street from the Guggenheim, and I was just waiting at the stoplight. And sitting there at the stoplight, I couldn't tell you what it is now because I wrote this essay years ago, but this entire essay just came to me from sitting at the stoplight. So this time dilation thing is really a useful technique that you can be sitting somewhere looking at something, and that reminds you of something, which reminds you of something, which reminds you of something, and then from that you get, not like I said, a conclusion, but from that you get this thought piece, this essay. So somebody said they're not seeing the link. It should be right here in the chat box. I just put it two chats back. It's the mobile.newyorktimes.co link. So the second way that I want to invite you to look at personal essays is this one that I mentioned with Kim and her piece about leaving her child in the car and getting arrested. And this is something that Granta, which I mentioned also in the chat box, particularly specializes in. These are essays where you take an anecdote, you take something that happened, and then you examine it through the lens of larger societal complications. So for instance, in this piece about leaving her child in the car, Kim uses to talk about how parenting has changed from when she was young, and you could just go run around in the neighborhood and your parents had no idea where you were. You might have gotten kidnapped. You might have gotten hit by a car. You might have run down the street. And the concept of the Good Samaritan and the person who called the police when she was in the call in the store for exactly a minute and a half and took a picture of her child sitting in the car without her there. What is that role? What does it say about that person or about society that somebody did that? And this is where, like I said, it's very important to avoid opinions and even to avoid presenting the details in your essay in a way that makes the reader be pushed towards one opinion or another. Now, a sort of complication or an extension of the larger societal complications of a single incident is something called an object lesson, which is the larger implications of a single object. So again, I'm going to take a non-travel example here. So there's actually a series of small books called Object Lessons, and I saw this delightful panel in Reykjavik over the summer of some people who had written object lesson books. There's entire books just about socks, about trash. Those of you who are foodies are probably familiar with Michael Pollan. One of my favorite books of his is called The Botany of Desire. And he takes four foods and essentially gives you four quite long essays about these foods, about their place in history, about what they mean to people. A newer book of his called Cooked does the same thing with four different cooking methods. So these object lessons essentially take something as a point of departure and then dig and dig and dig and dig, both through the lens of your own observations and your own experiences with this item, as well as how other people experience them, but always digging, going below the surface and never settling on a specific conclusion. Now, another thing that's sort of related to these object lessons is this concept of vignettes. So these are the essays that are most commonly miscategorized as nonfiction short stories. So this is when, and these are some quotes that I pulled from a New York Times piece about Philip's work, but these are ones where the essays themselves are almost like snapshots. And this is a word that you've probably heard me use before to talk about different types of articles that you can be writing. So these snapshots are just tiny scenes that are designed to give you a glimpse of something. However, they should be giving you a glimpse, not just in a purely descriptive way. They should give you a glimpse in a way that makes you wonder. And I've mentioned this in the past, but a really great example of this is in Don George's book, The Way of Wanderlust, which is a collection of his own past published pieces. And he has one that takes place in an art museum on the French Riviera that I absolutely recommend reading if you want to get into this snapshot style of writing essays. Now, the last one is the question. So rather than taking a specific object as a point of departure or a moment or the larger implications of that moment as opposed to the historical lead up to that moment, you can take a question. So in this case, I've pulled out this quote, which really shows the types of questions that are useful for a departure point for an essay. So in this case, it says the ultimate question may not be what is the correct critical judgment to make of a particular film, but what are our different needs and understandings at various stages in life? And so what this means is that if you are going to write an essay, which starts from a question as a point of departure, that question needs to be open-ended. The same as when we talked about doing interviews, that you want to give people questions that are not yes or no questions. As an essayist, you need to give yourself open-ended questions if you are going to use a question as a point of departure for an essay. So someone's asked me to repeat. So the Way of Wanderlust by Don George is the book that contains the story about the art museum, which I was saying is a great example of this vignette style. So just one more point on this question process. So question essays can be things like, you know, why do different airlines board differently? And you could talk about some different airlines that you've taken and some hilarious incidents or harrowing incidents that happened during the boarding process and how different airlines give different reasons that they board in different ways. And, you know, and I'm going to talk again about endings and how to do them in this soft landing way, and end with saying something akin to that, you know, each airline gives its own psychological rationale for the boarding process, but humans inherently defy logical categorization, or something like that, where you're showing that there is no definitive answer to the boarding process, to how to board correctly, or even why different airlines do it differently. So I said we're going to talk about landing. So just a sort of funny clip on this. I don't have the link readily available to drop in the chat box, but if you look up the anniversary of Shakespeare, there was a major Shakespearean anniversary recently, and there was a delightful collection of really, really top British actors, and even Prince Charles, who did a very funny skit about the Hamlet phrase, to be or not to be, that is the question. And this skit was all about which word you should land on, which word you should emphasize, and how that emphasis means different things and what is correct. So it's a really delightful little YouTube video, and I invite you all to watch it, because it really talks a lot about this concept of landing and makes you understand how what you emphasize in your piece, even at the smallest level, can have a really big impact on how that piece is perceived. And so one of the big actors talked about how it's very important to land. But in essays, it's quite the opposite, as I mentioned a few times. But in essays, the key is not to land. So it's not to land, or it's not where to land or where not to land. It's not to land, period. So what that means, and this is the delicacy of writing essays, is that if your essay goes along with this wonderful exploration, your own observations, like a pastiche of different scenes, but then you come to a conclusion at the end, it's gonna feel flat. That essay is not going to have accomplished its form as an essay, because you've, by making a conclusion at the end, turned it more into a different type of piece. So if you write an essay and you read it, or if you write an essay and you send it out and you're not getting good feedback, check your ending, because you may have tried to give it a trite little wrap up rather than just letting it sit there. And this is really key, both with the ending and with the whole piece itself. And this is actually something that I've stolen. There's an extra it in there. But this is something that I've stolen from Kim, who is the former Salon essay editor that I've mentioned, which is that if the piece doesn't make you uncomfortable, it's not honest. You know, writers, in air quotes, are really big about honesty in your writing. But this is one of the best ways to know, is that if you are not uncomfortable, then your essay is lacking some details. So if you've got an idea, I talked about 5 different points of departure. If you've got an idea already, now what do you do with it? Where are some places that you can publish that essay? So first and foremost, somebody had asked something early on. If my submission is considerably less words than suggested in the guideline, should I send it anyway? And this is a great point that I want to make sure to clarify, is that essays are the only time that you absolutely have to write the piece before you send it in, before the editor can possibly consider it. Because like I said, the ending and just the observations that you make along the way are what makes the essay. So the editor needs to see all of it there on the page to decide if they like it or not. So this is not a question of treating you as a professional or not. All essayists must write the complete essay before they turn it in. So if a particular essay section has asked for essays of a certain word length, I would recommend writing the editor before you send the piece and saying, you know, I have a finished essay of this length for your section. I know this section is typically this many words. Would you accept a submission that's less than that? And they'll let you know. And that way you have the opportunity to change the essay before you send it in. Now, Carrie had asked earlier about newspapers. Are newspapers a good place for essays? They can be, and we talked about that quite a bit, so I'm going to leave that one be for now. But women's magazines, this is the big place, guys. A lot of the women's magazines have annual contests for essays. Real Simple has one quite famously, but all of the women's magazines accept essays. They all do. They're very well-paid clips, and they can be a really great way to get into a magazine that has a lot of cachet that you wouldn't get into otherwise. And even more importantly, these essays that you have about travel, their home is most likely not in a travel magazine. It is in a magazine that publishes essays, and that is something like the women's magazines, okay? Another one is columns. So I give you an example already of somebody that I coach who does have a delightful column that she does, but these are the types of things that come up once you have written for an editor for a certain amount of time, okay? So you can't just go to an editor that you don't work with and picture a column of your essays. The only caveat there is if you already are a column essayist and you have a back catalog of essays that you have had published in other places and a record, but otherwise you'll need to work with an editor for a while before you pitch them for you to do a column for them. Another really big gold mine of essay sections is back of the book. So this is the articles that come after the feature. These are really often overlooked, but I'm seeing a lot of essays these days come up in that portion of the magazine, and especially with airline magazines as well. So as you're looking at magazines, especially when you're on a flight, make sure to flip to the back because that's where a lot of these essays live right now. And then the main place, in fact, the easiest place to get these essays published is in independent magazines. We talked about these quite in depth during the workshop over the weekend for those of you that are considering whether or not to get the replay. We talked quite in depth about how to pitch them and what they're looking for and how to know if they pay. But the thing about the independent magazines is that they tend to be, I usually call it all feature, but they're just really open. They don't have any rubriced formats about what they publish, and they tend to publish a mix of narrative features, essays, and photo essays, okay? So thank you so much for joining us. We've got one question. What is a photo essay? A photo essay is completely different than what we talked about today. It's not an essay in structure at all like what we've talked about. It's a series of photos with short captions that tell a story. And thank you guys so much for joining me for this a little bit short today webinar, but hopefully you were able to hear me okay and not too many airline announcements in the background. And I'm really glad that we were able to get this to work out. So thank you guys so much and have a really, really lovely weekend. Bye-bye.